The National Broadcasting Company presents, transcribes Sir Laurence Olivier in Theatre Royal.
This is Laurence Olivier. My choice this week is another story by Honoré de Balzac, a little stronger in vein than last week's. It is called La Grande Bretèche. I shall play the part of the Comte de Merret. The setting is in France, some 150 years ago. So, you've been back to Vendôme, have you? Back to La Grande Bretèche, my old home. La Grande Bretèche. Yes, it's quite a few years since I left it and started a new life here in Paris.
And you've never been back in all those years?
No, I've never been back. I never shall go back, you can be sure of that.
They told me in Vendôme that the Comtesse was now living in her chateau at Merret.
So I've been advised by my lawyer. I wish her joy there. La Grande Bretèche. I had quite an affection for the old house in its way. After all, I was born there, grew up there, and might very well have lived there all my days if things had not turned out the way they did. Well, I don't propose to go into that. Tell me, what does the house look like? Is it in good repair?
I'm afraid it isn't anything but. The whole place is neglected and overrun. Wilderness. Garden and drives are overgrown with weeds. The shutters are unpainted and rotten. Eaves choked.
Indeed, I'm surprised to hear that, in a way. Though, in a way, I might have expected as much. Neglected. Overrun.
And empty.
Well, not completely empty, I think.
Oh, yes. Madame la Comtesse left it empty when she moved. The furniture, carpets, fitting, everything.
Nearly everything.
Oh, she took them with her to Merret, and the story is... No, I still don't understand.
You don't understand what, my friend?
Well, the story is that she burnt it all in the fields there.
I'm sure she did.
But why? You may have had your differences, no doubt.
Oh, yes. We had our differences.
But even so, to burn it all, as though she couldn't even bear to be reminded...
Well, perhaps she couldn't bear to be reminded, even after all these years. But I hardly expect she's forgotten. Not for a moment, not for a single second, sleeping or waking. No, I can well believe that La Grande Bretèche must still hold its memories for her. I can even understand why she left it as soon as she was free to do so.
Why has she instructed her lawyers to leave the place untended, falling into decay and ruin?
Yes, I can well understand that as well. I've no particular desire to return there myself, for that matter.
Well, I'm sorry if I seem to be prying into your affairs, Monsieur le Comte. I was surprised by what I heard and felt you should be told.
And what did you hear that I should be told? What exactly did they tell you at Vendôme?
Only what I've told you already, that the place was left neglected by the Comtesse's own orders.
I see. So they told you merely that. Nothing else. Nothing about, shall we say, the Spaniards.
The Spaniards?
Yes. Nothing about the Spanish prisoners?
No, I'm afraid I don't quite...
I don't quite understand. I see. Well, perhaps I should try and explain the matter to you.
Believe me, Monsieur Le Comte, I have no desire to pry into your affairs. I merely inquired because I...
Because you thought I should be informed. Exactly. I must thank you for your interest. In fact, I almost feel that I owe you an explanation, my friend.
Oh, no. I'm only sorry.
No, not at all. I feel that I owe you some sort of an explanation, and that as a man of honor, you will be the first to appreciate the explanation when I have given it. As a man of honor. After all, honor is not a thing to be trifled with. If our honor is at stake, we must take steps to defend it, I think. Which is merely what I did at La Grande Bretèche. Well, that's a matter you must judge for yourself when you've heard the story.
We shall hear that story in just a moment when we return to Theatre Royal. But first, we'd like to remind you to join another edition of your Sunday newspaper of the air tomorrow on NBC. That's Weekend. A two-hour session of late news highlights covering everything from feature stories to notes on home, fashion, and sports. You'll hear Weekend's regular notables Mel Allen with his sports review, Earl Wilson covering the Broadway beat, and top NBC newscasters with informative commentary on all international headlines. As a special page of your Sunday newspaper, you'll hear a vital and controversial feature on women in government. And this Sunday's Overseas Ticker brings you reporter Joan Newman, with the latest word on British progress in jet planes. So be sure to join Weekend tomorrow on NBC. And now, back to tonight's Theatre Royal drama, La Grande Bretèche, with Sir Laurence Olivier as the Comte de Merret.
It was quite a few years ago now, in the time of the Empire, the time of the war in the peninsula, remember? The Emperor sent some Spanish prisoners of war to Vendôme. They were officers and held on parole. One of them was lodged at the inn there, a Spanish grandee, they tell me, though I never can remember his name. If you wish to learn it, no doubt you will find it written in the register, or perhaps they may even remember him. For they often seemed to be talking about him when he was lodging there.
They say he's rather a handsome fellow in his way, for a Spaniard. But Madame Leparc can tell us more than anyone, can't you, Madame?
I can only tell you what I know myself, that he is a well-mannered gentleman and keeps very much to himself.
Ah, too bad, Madame. Is he lacking in his attentions to you, then? And you the best landlady in all Vendôme?
He is a gentleman, monsieur, and he keeps to himself.
And good-looking, we hear.
Oh, yes, monsieur. Not on the tall side like monsieur himself, but well-made. And he has the most beautiful hands, just like a woman's, and takes a great pride in them. He has as many lotions and brushes for them as most women keep for their hair.
A very particular fellow, obviously.
Of course, too. He is a very religious man. He reads his breviary like a priest, goes to mass and regularly to all the services.
So I've noticed. He sits close to my chapel. Thank you, Madame Lepard. That will be all for now, I think.
Thank you, Monsieur le Comte. Please ring if you need anything. Good night.
Good night, Madame.
Good night.
Ah, so the Spaniard sits near to your chapel every Sunday, does he, Monsieur le Comte?
Yes, I've seen him there these last 3 or 4 weeks. As our hostess remarks, he's quite a personable man. On the short side, rather swarthy to our way of thinking. Careful about his dress, though not in a dandified way. You know him, Verney?
No, I don't have the pleasure. The general was telling me he fought very bravely. He was captured at the fall of Madrid.
He was lucky not to be shot, along with all the others.
No doubt. Perhaps he'll be shot here before he's finished.
Oh? Why? Shot by whom?
Oh, just shot. As a spy, perhaps. Or trying to break his parole and escape back to Spain. He seems to be a man of rather unusual habits.
What sort of habit?
Well, our hostess tells me that every evening he climbs the mountain to the castle by himself.
A few people would bother to climb it with him. What of it? He must be extremely bored out here.
Yes, perhaps it reminds him of home. Spain is nearly all mountainous. Or perhaps he's an antiquary.
Perhaps he is. Or perhaps he's an athlete. One of the grooms at the inn here was telling me he went down to bathe his horses the other night. It was rather hot, you may remember. Anyhow, he saw someone swimming in the river in the moonlight. He seemed to think it was our Spaniard.
Swimming in the river, eh? Whereabouts? Under the castle?
More or less. Not far from your place, as I remember. Down by La Grande Bretèche.
Really? I must look out for him on my way back tonight. If he stays out as late as this...
Apparently he does. The landlady got tired of sitting up all hours for him. She gave him a key to let himself in.
Well. Prisoners of war appear to lead interesting lives these days.
Just so. Well, gentlemen, I don't have a key to let myself in with, so I must get home before the servants are all in bed. We shall see you at the club on Thursday, Mr.
Yes, Ford. Yes, certainly. In any case, I must be going myself. I'll come with you, Verney. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
Good night.
None of that conversation meant very much to me at the time. It was only later on that I began to attach a new significance to it. I don't even believe that the Spaniard and his doings meant very much to Verney, either. Though being a lawyer, he was all too ready with his inferences. Well, we had more important things to talk about before long. By the Thursday night, news had reached the club of the Battle of Talavera.
Talavera may not have been decisive either way, but it's virtually the end of the British in Portugal.
Nonsense. Until we have driven the British into the Tagus, as we drove them into the sea at Corunna, the peninsula will never be safe for us.
The Spaniard seems to have a genius for guerrilla fighting.
Well, once we have the peninsula to ourselves, we shall know how to stamp out a few guerrillas. We gave them a taste of what they could expect at Madrid on May the 3rd.
I hardly think the mass shootings at Madrid reflected much credit on us, Monsieur le Comte.
Well, they were at least effective. There is a certain amount to be said for ruthlessness when it can serve our turn.
Two for the game, Monsieur le Comte.
Mm-hmm. Exactly an easy shot, is it? Well, here goes.
Too bad, Monsieur le Comte. As you say, some shots aren't exactly easy. But then, who would shoot a sitting bird?
I would, if necessary. As it was in Madrid on May the 3rd.
I shouldn't like to have such a shooting on my conscience.
Well played, sir. That makes game. Well, Monsieur Lecomte, you seem to have lost again.
So it seems. Well, gentlemen, like the British, perhaps I shall lose every battle, except the last. It was later than usual when I left the club that evening. 2 hours later than usual. The countryside was silent and deserted as I walked back out of the town to La Grande Bretèche. It was a brilliant moonlight night, and every detail of the scene was bathed in a silvery glow. The river itself had become a river of silver, that beautiful river Loire which flows below the gardens of La Grande Bretèche. All at once, I remembered what Vernet had told me the other evening, how the Spanish prisoner had been seen swimming in the river on just such a moonlit night. Well, this time there was no sign of him. He was far too snugly housed in the bedroom of my wife. Well, I was not to know that, not just then. But I can well imagine the scene. Yes, I can imagine it all very clearly.
My darling.
Oh, please.
You're trembling.
I feel afraid.
Afraid, my darling. Afraid of me.
Oh, no. Afraid for you, my poor dear. Afraid when I wonder what is to become of us both.
We will go away from here. You must come with me back to Spain. There we shall be safe. Well, one of these days.
Oh, my darling. What have you done to me? I must be mad sitting here listening to you. I must be mad.
My darling. What do you think about when you are alone?
I think of you swimming the river each night to come and see me. And I pray for you.
Please pray for me. Always. Look, I have brought you a little gift. This crucifix. Pray for me every evening before it.
I will. Oh, how beautiful it is. Ebony and silver.
Yes.
I will hang it here over the fireplace, where I shall see it every morning when I waken.
And what of your husband? Won't he wonder where it came from?
My husband never comes to this room. When he gets back from his club, he asks my maid, Rosalie, whether I have retired. She tells him that I have, and he goes up to his own room.
He will hardly miss you when we have gone.
Oh, my darling. I am terribly afraid. When I think of what you plan for us...
There is nothing to fear.
Well, my friend, that is what I suppose the scene must have been like. As nearly as I can imagine it. Pretty scene, eh? Perfect little idyll of love. Only this particular night, you remember that I was 2 hours late. This particular night, Rosalie was not there to meet me. And I took it into my head to see how my lady the Comtesse did. I can almost imagine another little scene as well.
Listen. It's my husband.
Oh.
Oh, quickly. Quickly, he's coming to see me. No, no, not that way. Here, the closet.
No, no. Let me stay here and have it out
no,
with
no,
him.
No, I beg you, please. Please, in here, quickly. Come in.
Good evening, madame.
Good evening. It's late. I was not expecting you. You have only just got home? You look strange. Is something the matter?
Madame, there is someone in your closet.
In a moment, we continue. Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
We'd like to take just a moment to remind you of the Parade of Good Listening tomorrow on NBC, when famed maestro Arturo Toscanini returns to the podium to conduct another brilliant NBC symphony concert from Carnegie Hall. Carlton Cooley, guest violinist, appears on tomorrow's fine concert as Arturo Toscanini offers a program of music by Wagner and Berlioz. And remember that Sunday means top dramatic entertainment on NBC, when brilliant actors Frederick March and Florence Eldridge share the spotlight in There Shall Be No Night on another great NBC Star Playhouse. In The Marriage, you'll enjoy another fine comedy session with that delightful husband-wife acting team, Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy. Tomorrow, Ben and Liz Marriott find themselves involved in an endless sightseeing merry-go-round as an out-of-town visitor accepts an age-old invitation. Later tomorrow, there's High Western Adventure on Six Shooter, when popular Jimmy Stewart stars as fast-shooting, slow-talking Britt Ponsett. Hear how Britt aids the new sheriff of Dawson County in a search for his long-lost father on tomorrow's Six Shooter drama. Listen for another dramatic episode of Stroke of Fate, the exciting drama of how a single event may have altered the entire course of the nation and the world. Try to imagine what might have happened if the French had won the crucial Battle of Quebec back in 1759. You'll enjoy hearing how this stroke of fate may have altered our struggle for independence. Movie fans will want to join MC Jimmy Wallington for personal answers to your queries about screen favorites on the popular Ask Hollywood show. Then you and your family will enjoy NBC's For Better Living program, when a host of distinguished panelists offer helpful ideas on how you may better your community life.
And now we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
Madame, there is someone in your closet.
No, monsieur.
You will pardon me if I take the liberty of making sure.
Before you do that, I hope you realize that if you do look...
Yes?
That if you look and find no one there, that all will be over between us, monsieur.
Very well, Josephine. I will not look in the closet. I can see that whatever I found or did not find, it would come between us ever after.
So, you believe me?
I believe in your immortal soul. I believe that you would not commit a mortal sin to save yourself from death, or that you would willfully endanger your salvation.
But, monsieur...
Here is a crucifix. Swear to me on this crucifix before God that there is no one in that closet, and I will believe you. I shall not open the door.
I swear it.
Louder. Repeat after me. I swear before Almighty God that there is no one in that closet.
I swear before Almighty God that there is no one in that closet.
So, I believe you. There is no one in the closet. I must obviously have been mistaken when I thought that I heard voices and the door of the closet closing. I don't remember seeing this crucifix before. Ebony and silver, very beautiful. Where did you come by it?
I bought it at Duvivier's in Vendôme. I think that he got it from a Spanish monk, one of the Spanish prisoners that were lodged in the town last winter.
But where lodged in the town?
I believe that they have all been transferred somewhere to the south.
I believe that they have, most of them. Excuse me if I ring for your maid.
Do you wish for something?
I do.
You rang, madame?
Monsieur le Comte rang, Rosalie.
Yes, monsieur.
Rosalie, I understand that you have a mind to get married. I hear that you even found yourself a husband. Gonfleur, the stonecutter.
Well, yes, monsieur.
Yes, and I believe that you have told him that you will marry him only after he has set himself up as a master mason. Is that right?
Yes, monsieur. You see, we were thinking...
Yes, listen to me, please. I want you to go and call Gonfleur. I want you to tell him to come here at once and to bring his trowel and other tools here with him.
Yes, monsieur, but it's rather late.
Yeah, I'm perfectly able to tell the time. I want you to be careful not to waken anyone else in the cottage, but Gonfleur himself. And you must tell no one, absolutely no one, that I have sent for him. If he does as I tell him, and you do as I say, I will see that he has enough money to satisfy both of you.
Oh, but, monsieur, what is...
Do you wish to say something?
No.
Very well, Rosalie. Is that quite clear? You are not to mention this to anyone at all, or...
I understand, monsieur.
Yes, good. Here is my key. I shall expect Gonfleur with his trowel and his tools within the hour. You may go.
Yes, monsieur.
Monsieur, I do not understand.
Indeed? I should have thought it was plain enough. The door to your closet has been the occasion of an entirely groundless suspicion on my part. I propose to make sure that it can never be so again.
But you...
As you know, there is a quantity of bricks and plaster down in the garden. I ordered it for extending the wall beyond the stables. Well, that is what gave me the idea.
As you wish, monsieur.
I'm sure that you must agree with me. We must never again let a simple door come between us. Come in. Ah, Gorenflot. I have a little job for you. I know it's rather late, but you must pardon my whims. I intend to pay you quite generously.
Yes, sir.
Gorenflot, I want you to bring up enough stone and plaster from the courtyard to wall up the door of this closet for me. It can be done by morning, I think.
Yes, monsieur, I think that can be done.
Yes, good. Then start right away. Have I your permission, madame, to ask Rosalie's assistance?
Of course. Rosalie, go and help the mason.
After all, it takes quite a number of bricks to wall up the door of a closet. Needless to say, I remained in the room with my wife while preparations for the work were being made. It was a source of some amusement to me, the efforts she made to communicate with Rosalie. I'm sure she managed to do so with looks, if not with words. I was under no illusions as to the fact that Rosalie knew exactly who was behind that closet door. I had no illusions myself, or, of course, I would have had none had I not heard the Countess swear that the closet was actually empty. I forgot to tell you why I was so late home tonight, madame.
It was later than usual. I presume that you had gone up to bed.
An unusually interesting discussion at the club. Perhaps you've already heard of our victory at Talavera, if we can really call it a victory.
I had not heard.
No, yes. The British have been turned back in their tracks. As I said myself, it can hardly rank as a second Corona, but at least it has put a stop to the British plans in
nothing.
Portugal. We were discussing the possible outcome of the battle over a game of billiards. I'm afraid that I did not convince them all of my point of view.
I'm sorry.
It seems to me that if Napoleon is to consolidate the ground won, he will have to take steps to stamp out disaffection among the Spanish people. Am I boring you?
I'm sorry. I was thinking of something else.
The Spaniard is a wily customer, as our troops found out at Saragossa. I think that we shall have to teach him a stern lesson.
I'm sure you are right, monsieur.
Yes, I'm sure that I am. Well, Gorenflot, how's the work getting along?
It will be finished before much longer, monsieur.
Good. When the bricks are laid, I want the wall plastered over from floor to ceiling.
Yes, monsieur.
I wonder whether I've not been neglecting you these last few months, Josephine. After your illness, we agreed it was better that we should keep to our own rooms. You must often have felt lonely.
I have often felt lonely, monsieur.
I'm sorry. Now that you're well again, you are well again, I think.
Yes, monsieur.
A little pale, perhaps. That's probably the lateness of the hour. I must apologize for this disturbance. Still, I see that you've taken the trouble to dress most prettily. I'm flattered by such trouble.
I am glad, monsieur.
In fact, I propose to spend what is left of the night in your company, madame.
Monsieur, the wall is finished.
Good. Then plaster it over and make an end. When the work was done, I gave my orders to the man. He was not to leave La Grande Bretèche until I had spoken to him the following morning. As for Rosalie, she was to tell him nothing of what she thought or of what she believed. For myself, I shared her room with the Countess. I fancy that neither of us slept very well last night. Pleasant morning, madame. Will you wear the same dress for me that you wore last night?
If you wish, monsieur.
A little close in here, I think. Let me open the windows. I have to settle last night's little business with Gorenflot, and then must go into the town. I have to arrange for a passport with the mayor. I've forgotten that. Perhaps you'd ring for Rosalie.
Certainly.
By the way, your crucifix. I'll take it with me, if I may. I should like to order another one for myself. I think you said that you bought it from Duvivier?
Yes.
Good. Then allow me, won't you? A charming piece of workmanship.
Madame rang?
Rosalie, tell Gorenflot that I wish to speak to him. He stayed on here, as I told him?
Yes, monsieur.
Good. Then have my horse saddled for me. I have to ride into the town. I shall see Gorenflot in the library.
Yes, monsieur.
Gorenflot?
Monsieur?
I'm going into the town to get you a passport. I will also give you 6,000 francs. You are to go immediately to Paris, where I will follow you in a little while. There I will arrange for you to be paid a further 6,000 francs at the end of 10 years, provided that you leave France and do not return before that time. As for Rosalie, I understand that you wish to marry her.
Yes, monsieur.
Yes, very well. I shall give her a dowry of 10,000 francs on condition that you take her abroad with you and both keep silence about the work that you did for me last night. Silence. Do you understand?
Yes, monsieur.
Then you will do as I say. After I've obtained your passport, you will go at once to Paris. I'll give you an address where you will wait for me.
Yes, monsieur.
Yes. Further details I will arrange with you through my Paris lawyers. You agree to my terms?
Yes, monsieur.
Good. Then I will get you a seat on the Paris coach. Meanwhile, you will mention this to nobody but to Rosalie.
Yes, monsieur. I understand.
Yes. My horse was waiting at the door, and I rode off into Vendôme. That is to say, I rode off towards Vendôme. When I was out of the drive and out of sight of the house, I stopped my horse and dismounted. I tethered her to the fence and made my way back towards the house by the pathway through the orchard. Once again, I could well imagine a scene. A scene that was taking place back there in La Grande Bretèche. I was curious to see whether I'd imagined it correctly.
Oh, Rosalie! Help me! Quickly! Oh, quickly! He must be suffocating.
Oh, madame, he will be all right, I'm sure.
Magos! Magos, it's I! Answer me! Oh, he's still alive. Oh, quickly! We can break a hole through the wall, build up the bricks again, and replaster it.
Yes, madame.
Help me pry out a brick quickly! Quickly!
Maybe I can help you, madame. Put madame on the bed. She's unwell.
Yes,
very well, Rosalie. You may leave us.
Monsieur, for pity's sake, monsieur, I beg you.
You swore upon the cross that there was no one there.
For pity's sake, monsieur. Beg us, beg us, beg us.
You swore upon the cross that there was no one there. For 20 days, I never left the Contessa's side, for she was dangerously ill. For 20 days, I never left her room. During that time, two items of news were brought to me. Some clothes were found by the riverside, hidden among the bushes upon the opposite bank. And a Spanish prisoner of war, lodged at the inn on parole, had vanished. He was never heard of again. Well, my friends, that is the story that I have never told anyone before. It is an old story, but it may explain to you why La Grande Bretèche is deserted and neglected. Neglected, yes. Yes, but not entirely empty. This is Laurence Olivier again. I would like to express my thanks to our cast, which has included this week Elizabeth Kentish, who played the part of the Comtesse de Mery, and also Stephen Jack, Keith Pyatt, Mervyn John, Paul Whitson-Jones, Thea Wells, and Joan Lord. And so, until next week, when once again I hope to have the pleasure of your company, au revoir, and thank you.
Laurence Olivier starred in today's transcribed program. The script was by Derek Patmore. The music was under the direction of Sidney Torch. Theatre Royal is an NBC presentation produced and directed by Harry Allen Towers.
Word of advice from your National Safety Council: if you're driving this weekend, drive carefully. The life you save may be your own. Tonight, hear Hollywood Story on the NBC Radio Network.